If you haven't already, explore the many ways to connect with our show. Watch full uncut conversations on YouTube, gain AIA-approved continuing education credits through Arcademy, and make sure to check us out and follow us on social media at Detailed Podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
I also think just, you know, some nice bit of materials, some warmth, some good furniture, places to be that honor the introvert. I think sometimes we get a little too focused on the community coming together and realizing that, you know, introverts, I think I'm a closet introvert myself. And so having places where you can be outside, be part of the community, but maybe be by yourself are also important.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, senior specification writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guest today is Aaron Thornton, AIA, principal at Leddy Madam Stacey Architects, or LMSA, in San Francisco, California. Aaron has over 25 years of professional experience and a well-rounded skill set in design, planning, detailing, and project leadership. Aaron divides his time between education and affordable housing projects throughout the Bay Area, and he recently led the design and construction of a new net zero energy school for San Francisco University High School at their California campus. He enjoys working through complex challenges and communicating with multiple stakeholders on tight urban sites to create sustainable structures reflecting their communities and context. The project we're talking about today is Monterra in San Mateo, California. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Monterra stands as a welcoming new gateway to the Bay Meadows transit-oriented development in San Mateo, California. The four-story, 124,491 square foot community provides 68 affordable apartments for low-income families and individuals, including 12 homes reserved for formerly homeless veterans.
Monterra is sited at the old racetrack in San Mateo. And like many racetracks around the Bay Area, they have lost their popularity and were no longer a racetrack. So in the early 2000s, there was a big master plan done to reimagine this as, you know, kind of a new place, more dense housing. There's a Caltrain line nearby, which links San Francisco to San Jose, of which San Mateo is almost directly in the middle. And this was the affordable housing piece of that project. So we worked with Bridge Housing, was the developer. They brought us on to develop this site. The fun fact for me about this site is that it's located right next to the Nueva Upper School, which is a school that Leddy Madam Stacey did, and that I have actually done some work on over the years. So it kind of encapsulates the, like, we do affordable housing and education projects and community projects. So we did the affordable housing, we did the high school. If we'd done a community center in the park, it would have been like the perfect trifecta. So this building ended up serving some formerly homeless, some veterans, and some low-income families in the area. So it was great to participate not only in that master plan, but to help serve that community as well.
On a personal level, Aaron reflects on how transit-oriented development shaped the design of this project and continues to guide the broader ethos of building affordable housing near transit, making smart use of density.
My thesis was about at the MacArthur BART station and Interstate 580 in Oakland. That road kind of cut through the neighborhood and cut off a lot of the neighborhood and left a lot of the remainder incredibly disadvantaged. And my thesis was to actually build a city over the freeway. So the freeway comes over the city, and then you build over the freeway, inhabit it and populate it, and use that as a way to reclaim what the city is. So just the idea of building near transit, of building density near transit, is, I just think, an incredibly important thing to do in a place that's kind of worthy of putting your efforts. So, you know, there's things like you don't need as much parking when you're next to transit. So you get a little bit of bonus on parking. But it's also just building density and building it so, you know, you don't always need a car, I think, is really one of the key considerations for this. And at the Nueva school next door, we got a lot of bonus points from the city for not having parking, and students, you take the Caltrain there and then walk from the Caltrain station. So, you know, and the whole development also has a walkability component along the main street. There's lots of good stuff that you can just walk through. So for being a suburban development, it has a lot of those urban walkable connected features, which I think are just, you know, incredibly important for us as humans and maybe for the planet at large.
Monterra cleverly condenses not just ample affordable housing units, but also a generous courtyard, community spaces, and even a redwood grove.
And so this building is about 125,000 square feet. It's 68 family units. At least half are twos and threes, and then the other half are studios and one bedrooms. It's four stories of wood construction over one story of concrete podium. It's 82 parking spaces, which was less than the city required, but was, you know, part of a negotiation. It has a fabulous courtyard that's very large in the back. It's got a multi-purpose room. It's got a community room. It's got a laundry room. It has a loading dock. And we had to do a little bit of VE, value engineering, in the project. And we used that opportunity to plant a redwood courtyard in the back. So there's a little redwood grove that is actually growing in pretty well, which matches the redwood grove we put at the Nueva school. So we have matching redwood groves between the two properties.
The project brought together financial support from public agencies at the city, county, and federal levels, with the master plan serving as a roadmap to align stakeholders and ensure a smooth planning process.
There were a lot of players in this. It's a little easier than our San Francisco projects, though, because in this particular case, there wasn't quite a there yet. They were still building. When we were building this, they had built maybe half of it. So there weren't as many neighbors involved. There weren't as many layers. I was working on another project in San Francisco at the same time I was working on this one, which had six community groups, which was like on two municipal properties. So by comparison, it wasn't as intensive as some of the other things we've done. But because there was a master plan in place, the planning department was incredibly serious about the master plan. And there were very prescriptive requirements for what your street wall is like. Does the building have a base, middle, and the top? Is there something I'd never run into before, is they wanted a loading dock in the building. There was a much more intensive planning process because of the master plan over all of this. So, you know, we try to do what we always do, which is just be as rational as we can. Like, here are the requirements. Here's how we can serve them. This is what we think we can do. This is what we can't. And almost try to quantify and make making the soup as scientific as possible and as rational as possible. So we can use that to help guide us make decisions. And we can tell people why we're doing something the way we're doing it. So it's not a mystery. It's not a secret soup. It's a very published soup recipe that we can share with everyone. That was a weird metaphor.
What? Yeah, it makes sense though. What was the loading dock for? Like move-ins and move-outs?
Yeah, they wanted the loading dock for move-ins and move-outs, and it was written almost in a suburban way that they wanted to drive into the site and then be able to drive out. But with the density we were talking about and the parking, and this was kind of an odd-shaped site, we didn't really have the room to do that. So we had a big negotiation on the loading dock, strangely enough. That was a lot of time and effort.
So did it end up with the loading dock?
It ended up with a tiny loading dock. We had a garage door. We had an official loading dock. You can back a truck into that dock and offload things on it.
Built on the site of the former Bay Meadows racetrack, the project presents a contemporary facade to the neighborhood while creating a sunny, wind-protected courtyard for residents.
As a racetrack, I should mention that I'm a big Charles Bukowski fan. And one of the things about living in the Bay Area and having racetracks, I always imagine Charles Bukowski hanging around at like Bay Area racetracks and betting. And so that was sort of in my mind as I was working on this. But the racetrack, by the time we got there, the racetrack was long gone. There's a community center there on the parking lot where the racetrack used to be. So there's no trace. There's no, you know, painting in the parking lot that denotes the track. But one thing that was really interesting about the site, beside it being roughly triangular, was that it was located along a gentle curve. So the road curved. And according to the master plan documents, we needed to put the face of the building on the face of the curve. You couldn't set back and do like a straight building. So we had a giant curved building as a result of the site. There are actually no 90-degree angles inside the building because of the curve, which I didn't realize how difficult that would be during schematic design, doing a building with no 90-degree angles and curved front and back facades. I should have, but I enthusiastically missed that as a real definer. So the shape of the site was interesting, and I think the shape of the site is largely responsible for what a fantastic building it turned out to be, because it follows that curve, and that was fun. One of the other interesting things about the site is that it was up on the height limit. California loves height limits, and there's no sense of humor among planning departments about giving you extra height limits until the SB 35 affordable housing laws came along, which finally give you some relief for height limits. But this project was before those were happening. So we had to fit in 4 stories of housing and parking, and we had to do it all under 50 feet. So that wasn't going to happen. So we had to sink the parking a half level down, which boosted the first floor a half level up. And that allowed us to do a landscape plinth along the first floor of the building and to put stoops in, which was one of the other planning requirements that you do. The California planners also love the idea of New York and the idea that houses have stoops. So those are in all the master plans, that you provide stoops in your buildings. So that was a way to separate out the first floor from the rest of the floors. We did work with a fantastic landscape designer, Jenny Sasson from Shed Landscape Architects. We had a giant courtyard. We didn't have to build to the density that we would have had to build, say, in San Francisco. So we had about a 14,000 square foot courtyard and not a lot of money to spend on the courtyard. So we ended up with a concrete pad. But we used paint and some materials and some palm trees to create these circles of influence along the courtyard. And I think for as low budget as that courtyard was, that it just turned out fantastically. Like it feels like a good space. There's a play yard. There's kind of all these features in this large courtyard. So we took something kind of daunting without a lot of fee and made it into something that I think is pretty precious.
A key aspect of Monterra's design was striking a balance between creating a safe, comfortable environment for residents and maintaining openness and transparency through thoughtfully designed shared spaces.
Yeah, I think the residents here want what we all want, like a variety of experiences, layers of experience. So I think for us, typically the courtyards are away from the street so that the building does have a place to come together, but has a place, you know, has layers between it. At the same time, I think having transparency in your buildings is really important so that you're never tucking anything away out of sight. So for instance, when you're on the street at Monterra, you can look into the lobby, through the lobby, out to the courtyard. And, you know, the community room is right on the front. So there's transparency in the community room, but it's raised. So I think the trick is you never want to lock anything away or hide anything away. You always want to provide transparency, but also have a sense of security. So whether you're raising things up a level or setting it back, I think those two things work hand in hand to make a comfortable environment. I also think just, you know, some nice bit of materials, some warmth, some good furniture, places to be that honor the introvert. I think sometimes we get a little too focused on the community coming together and realizing that, you know, introverts, I think I'm a closet introvert myself. And so having places where you can be outside, be part of the community, but maybe be by yourself are also important.
The exterior follows the curve of the roadway, with the facade gently bending to mirror its form, topped by a distinctive tiara, I love tiaras, of solar panels crowning the roof.
We started with the curve, and there's the main road into the development, which is Delaware Street, is kind of a fast-moving road. It's, you know, two lanes on each side. There's a bike lane. There's room for things, but there's a fair amount of speed happening on that road. And the Caltrans is also right next door to that. It's literally a block away. So there's some speed on the train. So the curve and the road felt like we should get a little speed in the facade. So there's this rhythm of windows kind of, you know, staggered off of each other that kind of rigorously march across the facade. So that was our starting point to just recognize the road. There was the plinth that I mentioned, which sets back and gives you a band of green for the building to sit on. The materials are pretty humble. It's, you know, hardy siding. For the midsection, it's, you know, stucco poetry on the top and bottom. We did try to use our sunshades on the windows to accent the windows. And then when we first designed the building, we wanted to put a solar canopy on it. We always try to put as much solar as we can. That got value engineered out, and we were left with what we called the tiara, which was just a kind of metal crown that sits on the face of the building. That was something that was important to the planning department, that we articulated the top of the facade. So the tiara stayed, the crown of solar panels was not able to be funded for this particular project.
Residents enjoy shared spaces that foster connection, such as a large community room, multi-purpose areas, a laundry lounge overlooking the landscape courtyard, and smaller meeting rooms.
So the units are all fairly generous. It's one bedrooms, it's two bedrooms, it's three bedrooms, two bath. So there's, you know, there's that mix. I think what's interesting about this particular development is it has a range of people. It's not one population. It's not all formerly homeless. It's not all veterans. So there's different size units calibrated for, you know, different folks, different family sizes, and those all kind of sit happily together along that curve. You know, the amenities, we talked about the big courtyard. There's a community room off the street. There's a laundry room off the courtyard. So if you want to do laundry and let the kids run loose, you can let the kids run loose in the courtyard. That's a tenet of one of the founding partners, Richard Stacy, is really a firm believer in the laundry lounge, which I think we're all believers in the laundry lounge. And I think it goes back to what you asked about safety before, right? It's this idea of transparency as well, that you know, you may move things away from the street, or you may, you know, put put them somewhere else, but there's always transparency between the courtyard and the laundry, between the laundry and the lobby, that they all can see each other and have a visual and maybe some physical connection. In this particular laundry room, we also got double doors, so you can just open that laundry room up to the courtyard and really have it function as an indoor-outdoor space. There's play spaces that are particular for kids in the courtyard. There's some mounds of just soft material, so you can bounce off soft material if you don't want to bounce on the concrete. It's bad for kids. There's bike parking. There's a multi-purpose room that can be used for classes, or it can, you know, set up computers, kind of have a little workspace. One thing I think the Bay Area does really well with affordable housing is that they not only have property management on site, but they also have social services on site. So there's a social services office as well that's staffed full time to assist residents at almost all of the affordable buildings we do.
Inside, the finishes create a simple yet welcoming environment, pairing concrete floors with warm wood slat ceilings, while door-integrated niches introduce light throughout the corridors.
So I think the secret is to be judicious with your materials. I mean, relatively, the materials are humble, like it's a concrete floor. But we did a double height space in the lobby, so when you come in the lobby, it feels a little better. I think in affordable housing projects, in any housing project for anybody, wood is kind of your secret weapon as a material. Just having a little bit of warmth and a little bit of a real material can really, you know, take a space and just completely transform it. So wherever we can, we try to, you know, the wood slat ceiling, maybe we use that a little too much, but I think that's a good way to provide A, acoustics, and B, a little bit of warmth in lobbies and in the community rooms. You know, we talked about the courtyard. The courtyard is concrete, but we used paint and some materials to help delineate zones. So those circles are kind of inscribed and they make the courtyard feel like a place and not just a sea of concrete. We have niches at all of our doors. So in the hallway, I'm a big fan of The Shining, that movie. And as a housing designer, I'm always horrified by the twins that sit in the hallway in that scene with the twins, very scary. So I never want one of our hallways to feel like a Shining corridor. So we always try to, you know, do things like, you know, A, make sure there's light at the end of the corridor. B, make sure there's some niches at the doors so that you have a space that's kind of your own territory. You can put your shoes there. You can put a marker board there. You can put a flower pot there. Just a little doormat, whatever you like, just something that says, hey, this is my door. That's one thing that amazes me when you go back once the buildings are inhabited, is how people take these niches and really make them part of their identity. So I think those, you know, just those little moves can really give you a better sense of home, give you a better sense of place, and give you more opportunities to inhabit them with your stuff and feel like it's your home, which it is.
Monterra combines contemporary architecture with sustainable design. The project achieved Greenpoint Gold certification through features like a high-performance building envelope, solar water heating, natural ventilation, and energy-efficient lighting.
Greenpoint Gold is a lot like LEED, but Greenpoint's program is calibrated particularly for multifamily housing. And it has all of the same categories. What is your energy use in the building? So for instance, this was back when we were still doing gas, but we have solar hot water on the roof. So our solar hot water is assisted through a solar system. It's about having materials that don't off gas. It's about conserving water and, you know, having planters that hold the rainwater before it goes into the ground. So it's all the things you would do in LEED for a sustainable building, just a little bit different. So LEED Gold and Greenpoint Gold are basically the same thing.
The distinctive curve of the facade posed the project's greatest design challenge, requiring close collaboration with the contractor to successfully bring the vision to life.
We had an imaginary radius 1,000 feet off the property line of the building, and then we used all the angles, so every wall was on an angle, but every wall was pretty much on a module as well. So we had our 1,000-foot radius, we had our curve, and it wasn't actually a curve because it was straight between the grid lines. So the contractor freaked out a little bit about building the curve, because if everything had to be a curve, it was going to cost a gazillion dollars. So we had maybe an 11-foot-6 module on the face of the building, and then it was a straight line between the 11-foot-6 module. So every module had its own angle, and then that dimension got caught at the back of the building. So we kind of struck a line so that you could, without finding the imaginary 1,000-foot radius, you could find all the lines in the building through dimensioning. So that was our challenge.
A curved building. I'm sitting here thinking, how much did you have to drink to get that done? You know, I mean, I can only imagine. Did you have a contractor on board early in this project that could kind of, you know, participate in the conversation about, wait, that's going to be really hard to build, or, you know, we got to work these things out?
Yeah, most of the contractors for affordable projects work on a negotiated contract basis. So they come in relatively early around schematics or design development. And we had Cahill Contractors, which I'll just, you know, make a shameless plug for, is one of my favorite contractors. I really enjoy working with them. They have a lot of in-house carpenters, so you actually can talk to a carpenter while you're designing things, which is helpful. And they say things like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever, you know, heard of in my life. And you're like, okay, maybe you're right. But being able to chat with a carpenter while you're dimensioning and not just applying architect math to the problem, I think is really helpful.
The construction phase endured a few hurdles by way of constraints during COVID and an unexpected error in an engineering calculation.
I have a rule. I like low drama construction sites. So I like to make sure that we're all friends and we're all having a good time and we're all building together. So I don't have any knockdown drag out construction stories. The probably biggest challenge with this project was that it happened during COVID. So we had to, you know, all deal with the challenge of not being able to get any of the stuff we wanted. Exactly. So we had to be incredibly flexible with each other. It's like, you know, I think we had in a couple instances, we get half of one thing and have half of another, and we just kind of made it work through the project. We did have, my like almost heart attack on this was that there was an error in the calculation for the planting on the podium from the engineer, and suddenly we found that our palm trees were way too heavy for the podium, what they'd calculated on it. So our solution was, and we had used regular weight soil as an assumption, we were able to switch to lightweight soil and make everybody happy. But that was my heart attack call, that that there was a calculation in the podium that wasn't working, and what we had planned wasn't working anymore. And so I was imagining, like, you know, these big round planters with tiny little trees in them. But we were able to have our palm trees just by virtue of using lightweight soil.
For Aaron, realizing the project's vision required a disciplined balance of rigor and logic.
I worked with one of the founding partners, Bill Letty, on this project. And I think what I've learned from him in housing is to be incredibly rigorous, but I also like to be fun rigorous and not be too serious rigorous. So, you know, all your units stack, your module is the same. You're only using a couple different window types. You're using one bathroom type, one kitchen type, that you're not doing a lot of kind of fancy extra things that you're trying to think is, you know, quote unquote, module as possible. I've really kind of carried those lessons from the early affordable housing I've done into new affordable housing, where things are getting even more budget constrained and funding is tighter. So as logical as you can be and as much fun as you can have with that logic, I think are keys to success in the affordable housing game.
Located just steps from Caltrain, bus routes, bike paths, and parks, Monterra supports its residents and the broader community by reducing reliance on cars, easing congestion, and promoting healthier lifestyles. Together, its thoughtful design and accessible location make Monterra not only a place to live, but a place to thrive. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious what Aaron thought we need to be doing to intelligently and efficiently tackle the housing crisis that we currently face.
So in California particularly, there were the SB 35 type laws, which took a lot of the entitlement impacts out of doing affordable housing and streamlined the design process. I think those were amazingly successful. What really hasn't happened is the commitment of funding to fund these projects on a larger scale. So the issue isn't really architecture, it's voting, it's a bond measure, it's assigning money so that these things can be built. I mean, there's plenty of things designed out there. There are lots of things ready to go. I think just convincing everyone that this is a good place to put money, that when you provide housing and you put housing on the market and bring the cost down, that this is good for everybody. And when people are housed, it's going to be a lot cheaper than spending more money for emergency services and, you know, all the other things you could spend money on, housing and making sure that you have people have a place to live is really priority. So to the extent that, you know, we can get out and vote and, you know, I pray to whoever I might pray to that the political climate can change and that we can, you know, release some funds so that we can just keep building.
I truly enjoyed this conversation with Aaron. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires the mark that you want to leave on this world.
Well, I think the reason that I'm working at Letty Maiden Stacey Architects is that it's a mission-driven firm, that it does affordable housing, that it does education, that it does community projects. So I want my professional expertise and my design ability to help the community to make things better than where I found it, to provide a space to learn, to provide a space to live. So as long as I can keep doing those things, I think I will be relatively happy.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.